Here's Higdon, it sits up nicely for Michael Higdon! And what a start for Motherwell! But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Sutton! Magnificent Malt! Stephen Robinson celebrates! Motherwell, 2-1! Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr and Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the NFC podcast. Tonight, myself and Pepe are going to look back in the year that was 2021. Happy New Year to you all, and Happy New Year to you, Pepe.
Happy New Year to you as well, mate, and everybody that's listening.
Well, we'll just get fired straight in. It was obviously a strange year from a football fan's point of view, I guess. We started the year with no supporters in the ground, as it had been for the first 4 months of the season. 2020 finished in quite a grim note with Stephen Robinson departing the club. We were on a 9-match winless streak. We went into the New Year's Derby at Accies in pretty low spirits, and that was to continue with a shocking performance. Really, it will be remembered for the display of Aaron Chapman in goal, but I don't think anyone in that day, Pepe, covered themselves in glory, and it was a pretty depressing way to start the year, really.
Look, it was horrendous. I think what I really feel bad about was the fact that it was Keith Lasley that was in charge. You kind of hoped that he would maybe kick the side on for really poor post-festive fixtures. And it was really just one of the games that I always refer back to when you compare where we were now to where we were then, kind of night and day. You mentioned Aaron Chapman, and that performance is up there with the worst goalkeeping displays that I've seen as a Motherwell supporter, and hopefully never see again. We've been pretty lucky with some of the keepers that we've had, with the exception of maybe a few. Sampson springing to mind, but he's certainly up there with horrendous goalkeeper. But that was soon rectified in the January window with probably the most positive bit of transfer business that we had with signing Liam Kelly.
Yeah, and what we'll do is we'll get on to talk about those January signings in just a minute or two. But of course, the aftermath of the Accies game saw the appointment of Graeme Alexander as the new Motherwell manager. It was an appointment that I don't think many of us saw coming. At the beginning, it wasn't a name that was linked with the position. He had previously managed Salford City and done a very respectable job. He was dismissed from his position despite not having lost a game at the start of the League One season. It went on to be proven to be a poor decision by the class of 92, given that Salford weren't able to even really mount much of a challenge for the playoffs, to be honest with you. And since then, they've not really kicked on either. But Alexander comes in with a trip to Sittmern on the Saturday, and it was a much improved performance. Devante Cole opened the scoring, and then we got a ridiculous penalty awarded against us by Bobby Madden. Lee Irwin hit the deck. Madden gives the penalty, and McGrath scored to make it 1-1. So it took the winless streak to 10. But straight away from the appointment of Graeme Alexander, there was these glimmers of light kicking through that the team seemed to have responded to the new manager.
Certainly was a good appointment, from my opinion. I think if we listen back, we did actually speak about him, and it was a name that was getting featured. It was a different appointment, obviously getting linked with Tommy Wright, and we all know how that could have ended up. But certainly for the first game, it was just that new manager bounce that you got. You couldn't really make too many assumptions from it, but it certainly was an improvement. But if you're judging it against the Hamilton performance, we'd really have been worried if it had been worse than that.
Yeah, there was a lot of room for improvement, but we saw those promising signs straight away. And then the following week, Rangers came to Fir Park, and yet again, Devante Cole, who really enjoyed a strong finish to the 2020-2021 season, he put his ahead against Rangers, who were hammering everyone that was put in front of them at that time. We held firm for the majority of the match before Cedric Eaton equalised late on. So a 1-1 draw in both of Alexander's first two games. We moved on to Pittodrie the following week, and Liam Polworth basically made his final bow in a Motherwell jersey that day. His red card was really costly, and we would go on to lose the game 2-0. But we finally got that victory in Dingwall. You've got to remember, we're travelling up north, bottom of the table, looking really, really desperate, to be honest. It was a dozen games without a win. We hadn't won since Halloween. We're coming to the end of January. Ollie Shaw put Ross County ahead. I can remember as giving so much space to Jermaine Hilton, and you're thinking, surely we've got a rough idea of the threat that Jermaine Hilton poses, given that he had played with us only kind of 4 or 5 months earlier. But no, we didn't. He plays a big part in County opening the scoring. I can remember actually reading social media at half time and saying myself, this is a team that are destined for the drop if they continue these levels of application. It just didn't look like we had a comeback in us, and it had been a long, long time since we had actually recovered from a goal down. But again, Devante Cole's there to come up with a big goal. It was a great ball through from Barry Maguire. And then you've got Bevis's Ronaldo-esque header. I think it was higher than Ronaldo, we managed to prove in social media. A huge, huge goal. We're going to win the game 2-1. And it seemed like almost a turning point. It was maybe a turning point for Graham Alexander as well.
I don't know if the turning point, because I don't think he had anything to turn at that point, if that makes sense. I think it was certainly a move in the right direction, is maybe a better way of looking at it. I think, if I remember right, we discussed it at length about the going behind in games and being incapable of coming back. And I think that was a psychological boost, not just for the players, but the support, to see that we were back to being able to dig out a result. And maybe it wasn't the greatest of performances, but it was certainly, I remember sitting watching that, the goal for McGabby going in, and it was one of the moments where you do think that was a cracker of a goal. One of the ones that you think about at the end of the season and doing things like this just now. But certainly was a really, really important victory. And you start to look at the results that we picked up from where he had started. It really was, as I say again, the new manager's bounce was really starting to take effect. And you were really starting to think, do you know what, this has been a really good appointment.
And we're talking about the positives that were there at the time. There was a lot of activity in the January window. No fewer than 8 new signings. Now, I'm going to list them off here. And I think we'll possibly laugh and reflect that not many of them came good, put it that way. Robbie Crawford, who left the club only last week to join Partick Thistle. Sam Foley, who didn't play until about 3 games before the end of the season. Stevie Lawless, who was on the telly plenty, but it was normally wearing a big stupid jacket and sitting in the home end at Ibrox. Liam Kelly, who's obviously been a monumental signing for the club. Tyler McGlory from Blackburn Rovers on loan, who featured sporadically but never really made a great deal of impact. The lesser spotted Eddie Nolan, who never kicked a ball for the club. Jordan Roberts, who certainly made a big impact in his first loan spell from Hearts. It's not really worked out second time around. Harry Smith, joined on loan as well. He was a towering striker that we thought would maybe be capable of mixing it up and amongst the Premiership defences. But again, it was a player that really struggled to make an impact. And in fact, his loan deal was cut short around about April of last year. So all in all, Graham Alexander's first phrase into the transfer market there, Pepe, not particularly fruitful with the exception of Kelly and Roberts. But I guess when you look at interviews with the likes of Stevie Lawless, who spoke to Ben Banks following his move to Dunfermline in late December, early January, and he said that he'd been speaking to Stevie Robinson before he actually joined Motherwell. So it looks like a couple of these deals might have already been in place before the new manager was actually appointed.
Yep. Certainly, when you read that list there, there's not many players that would excite you now. Again, I think we'll need to agree or disagree. I think Jordan Roberts did okay. I don't think he had a massive impact. I think we all go back to that great goal he scored against Hibs. He had some decent performances, but he done well. I actually forgot all about Tyler McGlure and I haven't forgot about Eddie Nolan, but you can't even mention him. Sam Foley was one that certainly appeared to be injured, but when he came in for the last three games of the season, I actually thought he looked alright. I seen he scored at the weekend. But I think you hit the nail on the head with obviously Martin Foyle was still there and the new recruitment team wasn't in place. So you've got to think that the majority of these signings, some of them are obviously Alexander's, but the majority of them you would think probably were given to him. Interestingly, I've seen that Eddie Nolan is back playing. I was looking, I think it was when we signed a new boy, Tierney, and I was looking to see who the position he was playing on live score, and I seen Eddie Nolan was playing in one of the Irish teams against him, so he does actually. He's actually fit and playing now.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of one of these difficult ones where there's always going to be kind of jokes made about guys that arrive and don't play, but you never really know what's going on behind the scenes. It can be for a number of reasons, and for whatever reason, in the case of Eddie Nolan, it didn't work out. We'll move on to February, and despite getting that win against Ross County, we were still right in amongst it at the bottom of the table. But we managed to follow up with a really kind of positive run of results. Devante Cole, again, we've mentioned him a lot already here. And Chris Long also scored inside the first 28 minutes to get us looking pretty comfortable against Dundee United. They got a goal back late on and made it a bit nervy, but we managed to get the victory and end a long wait for a win at Fir Park. Then we went to Celtic Park, and it was one of these types of performances pretty similar to the one that we put in towards the back end of last year at Celtic Park, where Celtic were well on top. They went 2-0 up, whereas they only got one goal in the game in December, but Alan Campbell scored late on to set up a bit of a grandstand finish, and we had a chance that I was convinced was going in. At the end, it was hooked off the line. So ultimately, we fell to a 2-1 defeat. And then Campbell again comes up with a goal in the midweek. For me, our goal of the season last season, his winner late on against Kelly, and it moved us 8 points above Aki's at the bottom of the table. It was a beautiful pass from Tony Watt and a brilliant finish, and it just kind of brings back the memories of how vital to our team Alan Campbell was and how popular he was as well, because I think any time that he pulled on a Motherwell jersey and scored a goal, it just felt that bit more special, I guess.
It actually feels a bit strange thinking about it now, because it feels like such a long time ago. I don't know if it's just a sign of me getting older, but it certainly feels as if the ones like Chris Long, Devante Cole, Alan Campbell, have been away for ages. I don't know why that is, but you're right. The goal was one of the goals again, like the Mugabe goal that you think about at the end of the season. The way that the pass, you've got the goal was created with that pass with the outside of the foot that curled round into his path, and you're just hoping and praying that he gets on the end of it. And it's the one of the ones where you're watching the telly, and it was even probably more apparent because there wasn't any fans there with the ball scalping the back of the net. Noises don't get much better than that when you're watching it on the telly, and it was one of, I think it was that the goal that I voted for goal of the season? I think it was that, or Alan Campbell's in the Scottish Cup, but certainly it was a great strike.
Yeah, it was a special moment, and it was such a significant victory as well. And at that point, you're thinking that everything's looking up, and we're under Graham Alexander, we're going to end up pushing well clear of the relegation zone. However, that
I think as well with that game, I think there was a wee bit of needle in the game because of the way that the media had taken to Tommy Wright and how he was, Motherwell missed out and he was going to steer Kilmarnock away. So I think deep down Alexander had a point to prove, and I think we all thought, you know what, I think we've actually picked the right man. I mean, that Kilmarnock team were really a one-man team with Kyle Lafferty. Is every kind of onus a hope that they had. I mean, if you look at just recently, the way Kilmarnock have been, and I think that added a wee bit of kind of a pleasure to the result.
Yeah, it certainly did. And I think every game that we played against Killarney in the second half of last season, there was that extra bit of space because of the situation at Rugby Park, and Eric Nicholson from the Perthshire Advertiser claiming that we had missed out on a managerial mastermind and Tommy Wright, and obviously it didn't prove to be the case. But we looked like we were turning things around at that point, and then came that double header at home to Accies where we lost 4-1, and then St Johnston where we lost 3-0. And I'm just reading the article that I wrote for the Livingston programme, and I said it set off alarm bells. I think at that point we were just absolutely terrified at how we had went so far backwards after appearing to have made really positive strides. It was, if the Accies performance was a shambles, then what followed after that against St Johnston, where we were so soundly beaten, we just didn't turn up. To lose these two games effectively 7-1 in aggregate, it was nothing short of embarrassing, and the team were rightfully absolutely given dogs abuse for it.
It has been a consistent thing with Graham Alexander, though, that we can go have this brilliant run, and then all of a sudden it's almost like we think we're unbeatable, and we get this kind of poor couple of performances, and you start to get the negativity back in. Now, if we're honest, I've said this before as well, that is the one thing. There never appeared to be any middle ground. It never appeared to be that we were nearly there, or we were unlucky to be beaten. It was either that we were all sugar or all shite, basically. And I think that really did bring the alarm bells on. I think by this point, though, you're starting to see a kind of different style of football and some different ideas coming through. And I think we all realised that some of the signings at this point maybe weren't his. So it was really just a case of getting to the end of the season in a safe position. And certainly I was willing to give him that time. I knew it wasn't perfect at the time, but you can't turn what he took over into a perfect formula.
So after those two heavy defeats, we travelled to St Mirren, and it was another draw, a 0-0 draw on this occasion. And that took us to the final game of the month against Hibs at Easter Road. Now, bearing in mind the games that had went before this, we weren't exactly full of optimism going into the game, but the team just performed like we hadn't seen them for a number of weeks. Jordan Roberts linked with Tony Watt to open the scoring, and then Devante Cole get back to his scoring ways in the opening minute of the second half. to secure a 2-0 victory, as comfortable as you're likely to get at Easter Road, and a hugely, hugely important 3 points at a ground where, and we say this time and time again on the podcast, but you don't go to Easter Road and expect to get a result when you're Motherwell. And on this occasion, we didn't only get the 3 points, but we got a really confidence-boosting performance as well. And I think it's quite often said there's ways to lose a match and there's ways to win a match. And to win in that sort of style must have been a huge lift to the team.
That was the best performance of the season, I would say. And it's the one that probably gets Jordan Roberts back to Fir Park. It was another one of the brilliant balls for Tony Watt again. But you can see that we're consistently speaking about the same players throughout this. The part that Devante Cole, Tony Watt played in last season was, particularly if you bring Graham Alexander came in, was pivotal to the success of the team, as well as the signature of Liam Kelly. So I think we could all see positive signs coming, and it certainly was a major improvement. If you'd said to us after the Hamilton game that we would go to Hibs and win in such a convincing fashion, you would have laughed it off. So a real quick turnaround in it that shows you how quick things can change in football.
Yep, that's it. It's a short month of February, and we managed to fit quite a lot into it. The month of March began with another big win to help ease our relegation fears, a 3-1 victory over Livingston at Fir Park. Though in the last game prior to the split, we went to Rugby Park and lost 4-1. And it was just yet another one of those disastrous afternoons where we were well beaten, and that ensured there was a fair bit of work left to be done in the remaining 5 league matches. That was to be our last game in March, and April began with the Scottish Cup. A few fans managed to get a bit of a vantage point and watch the 5-0 victory at Fort Martin. And then the following week, our opening game of the split fixtures, Devante Cole got the only goal of the game as managed to defeat St Mirren 1-0. That pretty much all but secured their Premiership safety. And I can remember us having a conversation on here after that game and just saying that it was almost a relief that it was over, wasn't it? It was a pretty turbulent season. We at no point were impressive. It wasn't enjoyable. We had watched games on laptops and from plugging laptops into televisions and basically just any way possible without being in the ground. It just felt like it was coming to a close, and I think for most people that was a relief.
It certainly was. I mean, I don't want to dwell on the whole COVID thing too much, but it really did make you appreciate going to the football. You didn't realise how much you missed it, and it wasn't the ideal. But I think every club had to deal with it, and we just had to go on with it. Hopefully, we never need to sit and watch a full season in a stream again, because it wasn't great. You don't know how much that had an effect on the team. And it was, I think we discussed it as well. Another thing that was really prevalent was the fact that when you were sitting watching it on the TV, there was far more social media interaction with people being negative, and I include myself in that. I'm not being critical to anybody, but if you're sitting at Fir Park, it's not like people are jumping on their phones and creating a debate during the game some of the time. And that was a factor that probably had another kind of a detrimental effect to the season, in my opinion. But that's just the way the world now. And I suppose the one thing that we didn't know what was going to happen. It was just looking forward to hopefully getting back into the stadium as soon as we could.
Morton travelled to Fir Park with a place in the quarterfinals of the Scottish Cup up for grabs the week following the St Mirren victory, a Friday night game. And it was one I can actually remember quite looking forward to, because a place in the quarterfinals of the Scottish Cup, they actually drew the the fifth round as it was last season, and then the quarterfinals on the same day. So we knew that we would play either Stranraer or Hibs away in the quarterfinals. But a chance to get to the last day of the Scottish Cup, but it's a game that you can't help but get up for. And then the 90 minutes of normal time brought me down to earth with a crashing thud. It was absolutely awful. 0-0 after the 90. Extra time wasn't much better, but in the last minute of extra time, Stephen O'Donnell comes up with a wonder goal. You're thinking, right, okay, that's us. We've done it. We've not done it in any style, as had been kind of in keeping with the season, but we're there. But no, not the Motherwell way, of course. First minute of injury time, Marcus Fjortov heads home from a corner, and we're going to penalties. So you're thinking, this is just the worst case scenario. Surely we're going to make an arse of this as well. But that wasn't the case. Liam Kelly saves from Sean McGinty. We convert all of our penalties. We're through to the quarterfinals, and it turned out to be Hibs at Easter Road. We played Ackies in between that, though, and Mark O'Hara scored in the first half to beat a 10-man Ackies side. Our first victory since August 2019, and that was enough to absolutely guarantee a 37th consecutive season in the top flight. Beating Ackies was long, long overdue, mate.
No, it certainly was. And it was one of the games where you thought, is this going to come back again with the performances against St Johnstone that we've just discussed? And it was quite refreshing to win that game. I've always said this, that I don't really get too caught up with the whole Hamilton derby type thing, because I don't think that the fans really have a rivalry. They probably think it's bigger than what we do. But what was frustrating was that they were a really poor team that always seemed to be able to grab a result against us. So that was more pleasing for me to actually see that the manager had used his kind of experience of the league in the short time there and managed to grind out a result.
Up next was that Scottish Cup quarterfinal against Hibs at Easter Road. And it was a poor start, basically, that cost us this game. We were 2-0 down, looking dead and buried, but we produced a fantastic late comeback to get back into the game. We saw out extra time where we were under the cosh a bit, but held firm. The game goes to penalties. There it was Mark O'Hara and Stevie Lawless that both missed penalties, meaning that we exited for the second year running the Scottish Cup after a penalty shootout. A tough one to take given the circumstances, but I think when we reflect on the game, we were second best for the most part, unfortunately.
I think the thing that pissed me off the most was I always remember Stephen Lawless scoring quite a few penalties against us. So when he steps up, you feel expect him to score because you're used to seeing him scoring penalties, but that was a frustrating thing. But the actual, I think in watching it on the TV, it's one of the games you thought was dead and buried here, but it was a tremendous fight back. It really was. Tony Watt obviously coming on as a sub and really did change the game. And you're actually thinking to yourself when we get into penalties, the opposite for what you were thinking against Morton. You're thinking to yourself, is this our year again? Is this going to be the time? And I remember thinking that this will be the year that we'll go and win the Scottish Cup when we're not allowed to be at Hampden and stuff like that. And then, obviously, 10 minutes later, that thought was completely put out of my head. But it was an enjoyable game up until the penalties. Up to 80 minutes to 90 minutes when we managed to claw out the result. So it was another admirable defeat, I suppose.
Yep, a glorious exit, but an exit all the less. And we're going to the final few games. And what I'll do is I'll just kind of brush past them as quickly as I can. A 2-0 victory over Killy. A 2-2 draw at Tannadice against Dundee United, who were 2-0 down before goals from Chris Long and Devante Cole turned things around. And then the season ender was a home game against Ross County, where Sam Foley put us ahead early on, But Ian Vigers and Michael Gardine scored in the second half to keep Ross County in the Premiership, confine Kilmarnock to a relegation playoff, which they were going to lose against Dundee. And that was it for the season 2020-2021. As the season ended, a number of players departed the club. Alan Campbell would leave to join Luton in a pre-contract agreement. Devante Cole would eventually go on to join Barnsley. Chris Long also departed, while Connor Shields would join on a free transfer from Queen of the South. June is a month that will be remembered by most for the Euros, but it would be remiss of me not to mention the fact that it was also the month that we lost our good friend Andrew Patterson, who was a regular in the podcast for many years. We've still to kind of try and work out a way to incorporate Andy's voice of reason back into the podcast, because he certainly kept this place a much more sensible forum than it now has descended into, mate.
No, it feels that, I mean, the timing of it, Andy passing is strange, that he was so looking forward to the Euros and stuff, and I still remember you phoning us in the Saturday, and it's strange. Obviously, we're talking just now about reflecting back in year 2021, and I can still remember us doing it for the previous year, and still remembering some of Andy's kind of a calm and collected way that he would articulate his points across. As you say, it's hard to put it into words, and unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever way you want to look at it, life does go on. But that doesn't mean that I still have my badge, the Andy P badge that was produced to the games. Just there's that wee bit extra to try and know that you would forget, but just your own wee tribute to him, because his opinions were I've never known anybody to be kind of spoken about so well, and it's actually hard even just trying to speak about it now. But I suppose the thing is he's missed, and again, you just wish all the best to his family and whatnot.
Yeah, that's it. It's been a source of comfort, I guess, being able to do things like the run of badges, which so many people got involved in, and it's testimony to the popularity and the high regard that Andy was held in. And then to go on from that and do the sponsorship for a couple of players' jerseys. We've got the manager's sponsorship, we've got Liam Grimshaw's home jersey. There's money given to various other causes as well. Just because the support for a fundraising campaign in Andy's name was so well received, I think that speaks volumes. It's always going to be a difficult one to reflect on. I can only imagine how difficult it is for the family, especially coming off the back of the first Christmas and such like without him. But yeah, forever in our thoughts. And I think that it's been a bit of a driving force behind continuing this podcast and trying to kind of continuously put out Motherwell-related content, because the one thing that we did agree on in the weeks following Andy's passing was that he would certainly want the show to go on, if you will, and that's exactly what we've tried to do. We'll go on and discuss the Euros just briefly, Pepe. Stephen O'Donnell played a part in all three of Scotland's games, most notably the performance against England, where he almost broke the deadlock and really performed well above expectation. He did struggle in the opener against the Czech Republic. I don't think he was at fault in any way in the Croatia game, but ultimately Scotland would only register 1 point from a possible 9, exited at the first hurdle. We were still in the midst of restrictions on crowds, and while these kind of green shoots of recovery were beginning to show, with I think it was crowds of about 12,500 in at Hampden it still wasn't the kind of proper experience that we all yearned for, was it?
No, certainly it was. It was certainly good to hear a live crowd back, and I didn't get to any of the games, but it was certainly good to hear the crowd and the participation and seeing the difference that it made to the players. But just in relation to Stephen O'Donnell, he was the easy target, particularly in the first game against Czech Republic. I felt as if even the commentators kind of picked up on that as well. And it was just a kind of the abuse that he got, then the performance against England. But then what I would say would be that it's almost because he was an easy target because he played for Motherwell, and a team that maybe are not the most fashionable for those not involved with the club. But then I think that it's almost done the opposite. Some of the Motherwell support thinks he's too good because he's a Scotland regular. So he's damned if you do, damned if you don't. As I've said numerous times, Stephen O'Donnell's a 7 out of 10 man, week in, week out. And for Motherwell, that's exactly the type of player that you need. So it was great watching the Euros, particularly that Scotland were in it, but it was even more so that a Motherwell player was there representing us.
Yeah, it very much was. And other kind of notable points from June, the signings of Justin Amaloser from Maidstone United and Kane Woolery, who joined in a 3-year deal after leaving Tranmere Rovers. Now, just we'll not comment on either of these signings just now, but keep in mind that 3-year deal thing, because that is something that became a bit of a common trend as the summer signings went on into July, and Kevin Van Veen signed for Motherwell at the beginning of July, and that was followed by perhaps one of the club's biggest signings. I would go as far as saying one of the biggest signings in the last decade, is Liam Kelly put paper to a permanent deal with the club. It was pretty staggering, to be honest, because it just seemed in no way realistic that a goalkeeper of that calibre and a goalkeeper that had left Scotland to join Queen's Park Rangers, you would imagine earning fairly substantial amounts of money, would then decide to come back and play for a team that had struggled in the season previously. So we get him in. It seemed like a pipe dream to begin with, but it was a real statement of intent by the club, and fair play to everyone involved in getting that over the line.
I spoke about Liam Kelly in the very start. I mean, we were looking back in January, and it really was a surprise, because usually if a player does as well in a loan spell, I mean, was it Players Player of the Year that he got, and he'd only been there for January. So it tells you the influence that he had. And for us to get him back, it was great. I think what was surprising was, I think a lot of us thought that Trevor Carson would just slot back into the number one keeper with Scott Fox. So obviously bearing in mind he went out on loan for the playoffs. And we thought, well, that's our kind of two established keepers. And it was a great surprise. You're right, it was a marquee signing. Like up there when Scott McDonald comes back and McFadden comes back and stuff like that. And it was one that was really important. And it's proven, if you look back to this season, the amount of points that he's saved, the amount of saves that he's made us. And he's obviously the vice-captain, so a really, really important signing, probably one that Graeme Alexander would do well to better, I would think.
I would totally agree. A few days after Liam Kelly signed up, Trevor Carson left Motherwell to join Dundee United. And I guess that was getting a goalkeeper off the books, given that we had splashed out a reported transfer fee, and you would have to imagine substantial wages as well to bring Kelly in. Carson spent the majority of his last couple of years at Motherwell on the treatment table, and it was really unfortunate, because during his time between the sticks, he was a very solid performer for us. Then we would add a couple more signings. Callum Slattery joining from Southampton, and Yanni Ayala, Finnish internationalist, joining as well. The Premier Sports Cup began with a 1-0 victory over Queen's Park at Firhill, and then Fir Park finally opened its gates to fans again for the 3-2 victory over Queen of the South. So on that day, 2,000 fans were picked from a ballot to attend the game. And despite it being an emotionally charged day, the team were booed off at half-time because they were 2-0 down. And it just kind of reminded of why we love this club so much.
It was also the first kick of the ball when the ball came back for the centre circle to Dara Connor, who nearly put it over the stand with the ironic kind of laughs to say that it's us definitely back. But it was a strange feeling. People will look at you and don't have football in their blood and say, how can football be emotional? But it was just that. It's like we talk about mental health, and people that don't have football don't realise it's an escape. It's my thing that you go, and if you've got problems or you've got stress or whatever, you can go to football and just get engrossed in the game. And when you're in the house, there's other distractions. There's people kicking about the house, phone calls and stuff like that. And just not getting to the games, and include away days and that as well. It was just great to be back. I didn't quite enjoy it in the South Stand, right enough. But it was brilliant being back. I don't think we can underestimate how much going to football means to fans, season ticket holders and stuff like that, until it was taken away from us. It was exciting going to the game. I remember the feeling, almost like a kind of a cup final type feeling, that excited about getting back to the stadium. And I remember you commenting, saying how amazing Fir Park looked on that day. It was a really, really, really boring summer's Saturday afternoon. Perfect setting for football. The pitch looked as if the grass was painted. It was great. And the one good thing about being up in the South Stand was the view that you got of the whole town. It really was, apart from the game, the first half performance was terrible, but certainly it was great to be back. I'll go out and say the result didn't really matter, but it did. If we'd get beat, certainly would have put a sour taste in your mouth, but it was brilliant being back. Yes, it wasn't the greatest game, but how many League Cup games actually are? And I'm sure we're going to go to talk about Airdrie this shortly.
We will talk about Airdrie, but we'll talk about it very briefly, especially due to the fact that you gave it the big in an Airdrie podcast just days before we went out and absolutely stunk the place out and lost the game 2-0. But that game against Queen of the South would eventually finish in a 3-2 victory. We responded in the second half. Goals from Tony Watt, Ricky Lamy, and then Kane Woolery managed to get us a victory in the first game back at Fir Park. So it was then on to the Lanarkshire Derby midweek, a trip to Airdrie, and we kind of got the unexpected news there as well that we'd be able to have travelling supporters at the game. So there was that extra kind of impetus to the occasion. The first Derby match since 2007. We've got our first away game since Hearts in March 2020. So it was a long time coming for so many reasons. And just like we've alluded to in many occasions during this, when we're looking back on events from the first 6 or 7 months of the year, we just didn't turn up. It was a shocking performance. Airdrie well worth their victory. Again, the fans turning on the players quite a bit at full time. A 2-0 defeat, and really, as I've already mentioned, one to forget, and one that we handed our local rivals bragging rights. They didn't deserve it. We, on our day, we should be going out and beating Airdrie fairly comfortably, but instead we completely embarrassed ourselves.
That was shocking. But in hindsight, it probably was what we needed to happen. It's just a pity that it was Buddy Airdrie that had to be the wake-up call. I think a few of us had seen that the performances in the League Cup weren't great, but I don't think anyone's expected for us to chuck it against Airdrie. And as you say, been on the Airdrie podcast and virtually telling them we were going to scud them, and that they weren't actually Airdrie, they were Clyde Bank, really did come back to bite me. But at the end of the day, it didn't make no any difference in our season. It was just, as you say, that hurt more for me getting beat with Airdrie than any of the Hamilton defeats, with the exception of probably getting hammered 5-0 with them.
There was just one thing I wanted to mention about that first game back at Fir Park as well. My kind of abiding memory of meeting you at that game was that you had bought your son a 2021 Motherwell calendar on the day. I was feeling that July, was that the best time to be buying a new calendar?
Well, the actual story with that is that we went into the shop to I think get him the new strip possibly, and the woman that works in the shop gave my wee boy it for nothing. So that's your question answered.
Oh, that was good of her. She's always been very friendly. The group stages of the Betfred Cup ended with a 2-0 victory over Arran. So we qualified for the first knockout stage. Again, it wasn't much of a game. Liam Kelly's penalty save, possibly the highlight. But it's all about getting the job done at that stage of the competition. And by hook or by crook, we managed to do it. I don't think the mood was that high going into the league opener against Hibs, but it was certainly a very entertaining game. Kevin Van Veen got his first goal. I can remember going on record and saying that he looked like the kind of striker that if he didn't get a goal soon, then he was never going to get one. Thankfully, on that day, powered home a brilliant header and from Jake Carroll's free kicking and got us in front. Bevis McGabby then got us 2-1 in front after Van Veen's opener had been cancelled out. But in the second half, Christian Deutsch equalised, and then Martin Boyle scored from the penalty spot to give all 3 points to Hibs. On to the next week, Tony Watt scored late on at St Johnstone to give us our first point of the season. But the Premier Sports knockout tie gave us a fair degree of disappointment again, unfortunately. A trip to Dens Park, which had been a very happy hunting ground up until this season. But it ended in a 1-0 defeat. A deserved 1-0 defeat, to be perfectly honest. We were never at the races. And it's just, even that early on in the season, you've only played a couple of league games. You've had the 5 games in the Premier Sports Cup. But there was slight cause for alarm. I think given the performances in the previous season, you just begin to wonder what's going on and if we're just going to go through the same sort of toil that we had experienced in the previous 12 months.
I remember travelling up to that game and seeing the team and being a bit kind of a surprised of us. I think Van Veen was injured for that game. But when you get into the ground and you see the game kicks off and you've got Stephen Lawless playing as a striker, and you're like, what's going on here? Although we weren't at the races that day, Conor Shields had a great chance to put us in front, and you just never know. It could have been one of the games that we managed to grind out a result, but it wasn't it to be. But I do remember the leaving that horrible stand that they put us in, and then there really was a great bit of great deal of negativity directed particularly toward the manager. The performance wasn't anywhere near acceptable. We took a no bad support up there, and quickly the kind of I'm great, glad to be back at the football really did come back to reality, because it wasn't an acceptable performance. The second half was we created absolutely nothing. And I think really that's enough said about that.
No, that's fair enough. The following week, you're talking about the thrill of being back at games. That's almost kind of soured by the fact that a couple of weeks later, you're paying £26 to go and watch Motherwell at Livingston. But we did it, and it was a bit of a special occasion, I suppose. In the end, the first half was poor. We got a goal down. You're really beginning to get concerned by this point that things just aren't clicking whatsoever for us. But Tony Watt, heads his level. Then you've got that amazing moment where Liam Grimshaw turns home from about 3 yards for his first goal in a Motherwell jersey. It was just in the days after as well that we had announced the sponsorship for Andy of Liam's home strip. It just all kind of came together in a brilliant way. It was an emotional moment. It was a big moment for the team as well, who we were badly needing a victory. And to get it at such a difficult place to go was really significant, and maybe something that we'll look back on when we do a season review in 4 or 5 months' time. It is quite a turning point for the team.
I think, firstly, it was great to see Grimshaw back. For more of a personal point of view, he's a really popular figure since he's been at the club. It feels as if he's been here forever. And it was just one of the things that you always kind of never thought was going to happen. And it was I can remember being at the game and thinking, was that Grimshaw that scored that? And he actually had a really, really good game that day. I mean, so much so that he kept his place. But you're right, it was kind of when you said at the start, a kind of turning point, I think that was a really, really important point for Graeme Alexander in the season. And I would say that's probably more accurate. It's been a turning point. Again, going back, if you go back to when we were talking about the Ross County game earlier, the player's been able to show the attitude to not let the heads go down. It's never a great game when you go there. We've already discussed in the last podcast about the pitch. I don't particularly enjoy going there, but that performance, and particularly the way that we won it, it really did leave the fans leaving that game, driving up the road and feeling pretty good about things.
It did, and the following week, Dundee visit Fir Park. This wasn't a vintage performance either, to be perfectly honest, but the result was what mattered most. Tony Watt scored in the first half. That was after Charlie Adam, I must admit, bossed the first 20 minutes of the game and then came off injured. And it did turn it in our favour for maybe a spell of about 10, 15 minutes, but it was really the only time in the game that we were on top. But we managed to get the goal. That was Watt's third goal in 4 games. We get a victory, and suddenly you're actually looking at it as getting 7 points from 12, whereas only a week before, you're 1-0 down against Livingston at half-time, facing picking up 1 point from a possible 9 in your first 3 games. So it's amazing how things can turn in football so quickly. And it was turning in a positive note for Graeme Alexander as well. He ended the month by bringing in Sean Goss, Sondre Johansson and Jordan Roberts, again on loan from Hearts, as the transfer window drew to a close. September opened with an excellent showing against Aberdeen. Yes, there'll be people that will point to the fact that we didn't have much of the ball, but when we had the ball, we used it well, and we dispatched them 2-0. A really big victory, a significant victory against an Aberdeen side that at that point in time were going well in the league. They looked like they were going to have a really good season under Stephen Glass. I know it hasn't panned out as many people anticipated at that point, but yeah, they were certainly the team that were fancied to come out on top in that game. But we got a 2-0 victory. The following week, we were at Ibrox for a league fixture. No visiting fans allowed in the day. Rangers unfurling the league flag, but we managed to put a bit of a dampener on their party. We had went behind through Fashion Sakala's first half goal, which was conveniently offside as well, but that will never ever be mentioned. Then Kane Woolery in the second half silences the home supporters, and meaning we left Ibrox with a deserved share of the spoils.
Well, certainly, if you look at their goal, I mean, as offside a goal as you'll ever see. Absolutely no debating it. I watched it in the Cooper stand with a bit of hilarity with the phones going before the goal goes in, and then being there when the team bus come back with my wee boy and my two nephews, and it really did look as if the manager was starting to win the fans round. And I suppose what's important that we're talking about. If you look back to that Dundee game, we weren't really at the races. We weren't really at the races at the Dundee game at home. First one I'm talking about is the away game. But if Shields had taken that chance, we could have won that game 1-0. The way that they were winning games, those games that we were winning when we weren't playing well, which for me was a good sign. And having that mentality, which I think is important, other Motherwell teams that went to Ibrox would just have gave up, but we didn't. And that's the main positive that I took for that performance and result.
Yeah, and I think we kind of look back at so many visits to Ibrox where we lose the first goal and then just capitulate. So to not do that and hold firm, given it was a pretty hostile atmosphere as well, it was their occasion and nothing was going to get in the road of that. To take a point was certainly not to be, certainly not something that we could turn our nose up at. And I think we were feeling really good about ourselves, and the month ends with a 2-1 victory over Ross County. Tony Watt scoring the goal that won the game 10 minutes from time, celebrating on the wall of the stand. And again, it's one of these moments that will come to your mind when you're looking back in this season. Quite a, almost at the time, quite an iconic photo, I guess it was. It was, again, another game that we didn't play well in, but we got the result. And I suppose that's a sign of a good side, isn't it, to be able to win ugly. And we were doing that. We had done it against Ross County. Sorry, we did it against Ross County. We had done it against Dundee previously at the end of August. To get 6 points from these games, games that you look at the fixture list and put 3 points beside them, that's really important. And we were able to do that. As a result, 7 points from nine in the month of September, Dame Alexander named Manager of the Month. That was his second Manager of the Month award in only 5 months.
Well, obviously, we've seen the stats and stuff and the comparisons of Manager of the Month awards, and usually that's the kiss of death when a manager of kind of Motherwell or other kind of a so-called smaller clubs, manager gets it and they usually go on a downturn. But he seems to have been relatively consistent. I think a phrase that we've used quite a lot is game management under Alexander, almost going all out to protect a 1-0 lead almost, by bringing on as many centre-halves as you possibly can to protect that lead. And it has worked more often than it's not. So certainly the change in kind of a method and thinking was certainly something that was probably needed. Maybe things had got a wee bit stale, and it hasn't always been pleasant to watch. But at the end of the day, the manager, the figures don't lie. And it certainly, again, go back to what we started on against Hamilton. And you can't say it's an improvement. In relation to that photograph, that could have been an iconic photograph, but I don't think it is anymore.
No, we'll get onto that a wee bit later on, but let's continue to rattle through these months, because I appreciate that we're going on quite a bit here. The month started and the Manager of the Month curse kicked in, a 2-0 defeat at Tynecastle. Bit of a mistake from Liam Kelly to dive in the early stages of the match that proved costly, resulted in a penalty for Hearts that Liam Boyce was able to convert. Stephen Kingsley scored an excellent free kick. Later, Kelly saved a penalty as well to maybe make amends for his earlier error. But really, on the whole, Motherwell very rarely threatened to get back into that one. Celtic visited Fir Park after that, and they came away with a fairly comfortable victory as well, a 2-0 win on the day. David Turnbull returning to Fir Park and scoring as well, which was a pretty hard one to take, but at least he did a fairly dignified thing and not celebrate or rub it in our noses. The trip to Tannadice, it was important to stop the rot, but we weren't able to do that. We did get back in level terms through Tony Watt's penalty, but we'd concede 6 minutes from time, Charlie Mulgrew grabbing the winner. And I think maybe that one was a really disappointing one. You can compensate for losing it at Tynecastle. at home to the Celtic, but you were expecting a wee bit of a response from the players. I think we were quite meek against Celtic. We didn't really lay a glove on them, which was disappointing given we were in quite a rich vein of form. Celtic had a few wobbles. It looked on paper like a real opportunity to get something from Celtic. Given that we hadn't done that, you expected a bit of a response at Tannadice. And for the most part, I don't think we really succeeded in doing that. We had a few chances, but so did they. And really poor individual errors, particularly Nathan McGinley for the free kick that led to the second goal. Almost kind of amateur stuff. And when you do that in the top flight of Scottish football, you're going to get punished. And that's exactly what happened.
I think the Nathan McGinley point there was, it was at that point where I was thinking, he's just not got it, he's not good enough. And I was really frustrated with him when we left the stadium. Again, I kind of have another refereeing. I don't really like blaming referees, but Oyala scores just almost in the stroke of half time and it gets, in my opinion, quite harshly chopped off. So again, it's another kind of refereeing decision that goes against us. I know that we've got claret and amber glasses on, but I don't really remember too many decisions going for us in the last, really since Alexander's game, to be honest. Everything seems to be going the opposite way. But that was one of the days where game management, as we've spoke about, just didn't work out. And it was disappointing because you thought, right, this is where we bounce back.
At this point in October, ended with two home games. Firstly, we go 2-0 up against St Mirren, only to be pegged back at 2-2. We hadn't kicked a ball in the first half, and then suddenly within the first 8 or 9 minutes of the second half, we find ourselves 2-0 up. One thing about a Graeme Alexander side, very rarely would imagine they'll lose a 2-0 lead. He likes to shore things up. You've mentioned that earlier on tonight. But on this occasion, we did continue to kind of go for the jugular. We get caught out on the break for the first goal. Second goal, very controversial penalty. Eamon Brophy steps up and he's denied by a brilliant save from Liam Kelly. Somehow the assistant deems that he's strayed off his line. There's a retake, Brophy scores. Some fans are on the pitch. It's just a really hard one to take, especially when you're going home that night and watching the highlights and seeing the fact that Liam Kelly hadn't come off his line. It should have stood as a missed penalty and we would have perhaps taken the 3 points from the game. That said, it took a brilliant bit of goalkeeping from Liam Kelly to keep the score at 2-2. St Mirren really smelt blood at the point where they got the equaliser, and I suppose, understandably, the Motherwell players were pretty despondent at what had went before. Bobby Madden, certainly not our friend in normal occasions, but that's the second time in the calendar year that he had made a big decision that proved costly against St Mirren. The Halloween fixture, final game of October, this is one that we're going to brush over very quickly, but Bevis McGabby put us 1-0 up against Rangers, and then everything went to shit, basically. A 6-1 defeat. Another one of these, dare I say, pathetic performances. Yes, Rangers are a good side. Yes, Rangers are the champions, but there's ways to lose football matches, as I suggested earlier on, and this certainly wasn't a way to lose a football match. We were thoroughly embarrassed, and in the end, possibly quite relieved to only lose 6-1.
What did you say that? I mean, it was just an absolute shit show again. The only positive that you can take for it going forward is it seems to have given us that wee bit of kind of realisation. But that's my only concern. It seems to be that we continually get to this position where we look as if we've got a bit of consistency and then we come in with a nightmare performance. But the good thing for me at the end of it was I quite liked the manager's reaction. So we could only judge him for his performances thereafter, and as you say, we'll leave that one there.
Yeah, we will, because there's definitely better games round the corner, and November started with a crucial 2-0 victory over Aberdeen. We had such a disappointing October. You're beginning to think that our season's going in the wrong direction. But after a first half where we looked like we were never going to even go up the park, suddenly we burst into life with a couple of attacks at the start of the second half. Van Veenen absolutely sublime for him. Two great finishes for his goals. Moved us back up to fifth in the table. Went got into the international break on a high note. The only disappointing thing about that was, and that's something that's almost kind of followed Van Veen so far this season, that after a big performance, he tends to have to drop out, whether that be through injury or in this event suspension. He certainly racked up the yellow cards in the early stages of the season, and that's something I guess that has held him back a wee bit in his career. It seems to be the case that poor discipline has been a bit of a trait of his, but he's certainly got immense quality, and this was a day that he certainly demonstrated at Pepe.
I think the important thing is there, though, that he goes and scores two goals and the booking makes him miss the next game, if I'm not mistaken. But, I mean, that shows you what he's capable of. Two different finishes. And I think it was at a time of game where we'd maybe been through a wee lull with injuries and stuff like that. And it was quite an important time for him personally. But it was another game that we never looked like winning, but we managed to grind it out again. So for me, it was the kind of a, maybe not a performance, but it was definitely a result that was needed, because it could really have got the heads down, not just with the players, but with the support, particularly after such a heavy defeat that we've just discussed.
Stephen O'Donnell played a big role as Scotland booked a place in the playoff stages of the World for the World Cup. Defeating Denmark 2-0 at Hampden. A fantastic night for the national side. We have enjoyed a real renaissance under Stevie Clark. Possibly one of the best performances in quite some time for Scotland, and deservedly booking a playoff against Ukraine with the prospect of a trip to either Wales or Austria for the chance to go to Qatar 2022. Should we dispose of Ukraine first, of course. Hearts visited Fir Park for our next game, and goals from Connor Shields and Ricky Lamy helped us to a 2-0 victory. We were enjoying a good run of victories, but that would come to an end with a 3-0 defeat at Dens Park in a match where it's fair to say we were second best throughout. On St Andrew's Day, the Sky cameras were in attendance for the visit of Dundee United. Tony Watt scored an absolute perler early on to win the game. It was a sensational effort from the edge of the box, left the goalkeeper with no chance. The rest of that match was played in pretty much tropical conditions, Pepe, and I think as the clock ticked on, we were beginning a bit concerned that what was looking like a precious 3 points was going to be taken away from us because the game was going to be abandoned. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. We managed to see out the 90 minutes and end November on a high note against one of the sides that, touch wood, will be one of our rivals for a European place come the end of the season.
I certainly was, in my memory, one of the worst conditions that I've saw football being played in. And I don't think, if we hadn't been winning and the referee had abandoned the game, I don't think anybody would have complained. If anything, if they had been winning 1-0, we would all have been crying for the game to be abandoned. So I said earlier that maybe the refereeing decisions have went against us. Maybe on that occasion it did go for us. The game was kind of ruined. I felt as if we had started really well, but the weather kind of ruined the game. But again, we had to both teams were playing in the same conditions, and we had to get the lead and then keep it, and we managed to do that. And as you say, it's always good getting as many points as we can for part, particularly against teams running about us.
December began with the announcement of the signing of Ross Tierney from Bohemians. The 20-year-old arrived at Fir Park earlier this month, and hopefully we'll go on to make a big impact. Our Republic of Ireland under 21 international seems to come with with a fair bit of hype behind him and a fair bit of pedigree. So looking forward to see what he can bring to the squad in the latter stages of this season. The month began with a well-deserved point at Easter Road, and again it was Tony Watt who got the goal, cancelling out Kevin Nisbet's opener. That moved Watt to the top of the Premiership scoring charts, which is certainly an impressive feat for a player that was lacking goals during last season, despite putting in a number of big performances. 8 days later, we headed to Celtic Park, and despite producing a spirited showing, we would leave empty-handed. Callum Slattery hit the bar. Sean Goss was denied by a brilliant save by Joe Hart. But the hosts scored the opening goal of the game, the only goal of the game in first half stoppage time, and that was enough for all 3 points for Celtic. And the final game before Christmas, we eased past St Johnstone at Fir Park. Dean Cornelius scored his first goal in claret and amber to complete his journey from the stands to starring for the Steelmen. And then Kevin Van Veen netted his fifth of the season to secure another big 3 points. St Johnstone visiting Fir Park in poor form, that's always a kind of a red flag for me. I'm beginning to wonder whether Motherwell will be the team that gifts a team that are struggling an important win. But throughout, we were thoroughly convincing, a comprehensive victory, and as easy a victory over St Johnstone as you're ever likely to see for me.
Look, I'm not trying to take the credit away from you, but
what I would say is that I felt as if St Johnstone were really, really, really poor. I would go as far to say the worst St Johnstone team that I've seen in many a year coming to Fir Park. And I actually think we should have beat them more convincingly than what we ended up doing. At the end of the day, we won the game, got the job done, and that was enough. But they were really exceptionally poor.
I would certainly agree with that. The year would end with the announcement of further restrictions, and that brought a forward the winter break, so all fixtures would be curtailed following the Boxing Day card. Boxing Day fixtures were limited to just 500 fans inside stadiums, and our fixture against Livingston ended in a 2-1 victory. Kevin Van Veen scoring a sublime free kick to open the scoring, and he would add a second with 21 minutes remaining in the game. Livy did get a goal back and set up a bit of a nervy ending, but we would hold on for 3 points, and ending the year with 6 from 6 from our final two fixtures was a very satisfying thing. The fixture against Livy maybe marred not only by the fact there was only 500 fans inside the ground, but also that on Christmas Eve, reports started to emerge that Tony Watt had signed a pre-contract agreement with Dundee United. It was one that kind of stopped many of us in our tracks, I suppose, that a player that had stressed how happy and settled he was at Fir Park, it looked like if he was going anywhere, it would be a move down south for what you would imagine would be much bigger money. Instead, he's chosen to go to the side that are placed directly below us in the Premiership table. A kick in the teeth to learn about it in these circumstances as well. I think that rightfully Graeme Alexander excluded him from the squad. He has said today that won't be the case going forward. If Tony Watt remains at Fir Park, then he will be part of the plans. Watt has seemingly intimated that should he be at Fir Park for the remainder of the season, then he'll do his utmost to contribute. We've spoken about Tony Watt at length, and we've heaped praise on him for his performances at times over the last season and a half. I must admit, he wasn't a player that I was able to take to too quickly, though I've been very, very impressed by his attitude, especially in the last 18 months. He was a real bright spot during difficult times last season. And this season, he's added goals to his game as well, which has been a huge thing for us. He was in brilliant form. He was top joint top scorer of the league. You're thinking that he really has found a place to call home at Fir Park. When you look back at his career, he's never really laid down roots for any length of time at any club. You're thinking thinking maybe this is the time, maybe he's going to sign a new contract. A lot of gesticulating and badge kissing going on, but in the end it means sod all, really. There's a deal that has appealed to him more than remaining at Motherwell, a club that, while they've got a richer history than Motherwell, spent a long time outside the Premiership, only back a couple of seasons. I don't think it's better to say that I'm disappointed in it. I must confess I've not lost as much sleep or got as angry about it as some appear to have, but I think overall my overriding emotion is one of disappointment. I thought there was a better move for Tony Watt. Clearly there wasn't. I thought initially as well, when that story broke, that it might just be his agent kind of almost touting him out to other clubs and maybe trying to get attention from other clubs. That doesn't seem to have been the case either. It's a done deal. Tony Watt will be a Dundee United player next season. And we're now left with a situation where if he doesn't depart in the immediate future, we've got a guy that's going to be playing against us next season, playing for us. And at what level? It just remains to be seen, I suppose.
Listen, when the story broke, I thought, this is a lot of rubbish. Then the kind of silence for the player himself, the club, the mission on Boxing Day, then I started, I'm not going to lie, I was angry. Probably with myself, because I kind of said, look, I completely grant him his move away, his big move. It's going to be a life-changing amount of money. Then when you see it's Dundee United. Now, historically, Dundee United in the 80s were a really successful team. So if you look back to then, they were a massive team in the 80s. Their most recent times, we've been the most steady club. One of the only Celtic, Aberdeen and Millwall, the only ones that's not been down. In Dundee United's been a yo-yo club. So that's where my anger was. But as you say, as times went on, I've thought about it. So say, for example, Millwall offer him $2,000 a week, which is about £104,000 a year without bonuses and stuff like that. See if Dundee United offer him $3,000 a week, $4,000 a week. I mean, there you're talking, if it's double your money, you're talking a lot of money. Now, players haven't got any loyalty. It just sticks in your throat that it's going to be to our one of our rivals. But we've lost better players than him. He has been brilliant. There's absolutely no denying that. So, does he go with my best wishes? I suppose he's proved a lot of his wrong. He'll just be another player that will come back. He's not get the same admiration as what David Turnbull had when he come back. It's going to be more along the lines of Tom Boyd, Stephen Pearson, I would think. But what I will say is, do I want him playing the rest of the season? Absolutely not. So the scenario comes where, say we're sitting roughly in the same position just now, and Motherwell are playing last game of the season, Dundee United are playing last game of the season. Tony Watt knows that if Motherwell win, Dundee United are in Europe. You're not going to try and tell me that he said it's going to be 100% in it. Surely no. Do you know what I mean? If he's going to go, he's got to go there now and allow us time to replace. Even if we didn't replace, I still wouldn't play him. I just don't think that mentally he's going to be there. And he's done well for us. I thank him for his time, but time to go now. If he's not wanting to be here, let him go. I think the manager's got to come out and say that. And what is Tony Watt going to say to anybody? No, I don't want to play for you. I don't think that's it. It just seems to be a common occurrence with Motherwell. Look back to Declan Gallagher, Jake Hasty. It just seems to be a kind of common thing, which is really frustrating. And saying that, Tony Watt had signed for the likes of Coventry, Sunderland, teams that we spoke about, I think that the fans would have got fully behind him for the remainder of the season. And I think that's the thing that does stick in my throat, that he seems to be taking a sideways move. And
and not even playing at any higher level or a more attractive league, and that's what sticks in my throat.
Yeah, the thing that frustrates me about it somewhat is the fact that he's made the move to Dundee United. I don't hold any ill will against him for making that decision. The thing that does frustrate me, though, is, and you've mentioned individuals that have left the football club and not succeeded. Declan Gallagher, a good example. Jake Hastie, I'm not sure, is such a good example, given that he's just been binned by Partick Thistle and sent back to Rangers, and will be continuing to pick up his healthy wage for another couple of seasons yet. But I don't know whether if Tony Watt fails to hit the heights expected of him at Dundee United, is that extra money at the age of 27 significant? Could that set him back in his career that he has to move down the way? I don't know. And the fact that he's joined Dundee United rather than going back down south and giving it another shot there, I don't know. But that almost to me suggests a wee bit of a lack of confidence that he's got what it takes to cut it there. Or maybe there wasn't an offer from down south, but that would surprise me as well, because I think to have scored almost double figures in the first half of the season for Motherwell will put you on the radar of teams, especially when your contract's about to expire.
There's a couple of points that I kind of disagree with you. I mean, I think non-footballers like ourselves look at this differently from what a footballer does. At the end of the day, we always hear that football's a short career. And no matter, unless you're a multimillionaire, £250,000 is going to make a massive difference to anybody. And I would estimate, being conservative, I would say that's going to be the difference in his contract between us and Dundee United over the 3-year contract that he's going to sign. So he's got to look at it. If he's injured or whatever, he's going to be sitting picking up more money if this is just a rich vein of form. So for that side of it, I kind of understand. But what has really pissed me off is all this, I found a home here, and I don't mean that I'm annoyed with the way that he's conducted himself off the pitch, but almost tried to integrate himself with good things that he's done. And it's almost as if it's been with the piss ripped at us a wee bit. And I think that's why I was initially angry. And then if I had time to reflect on it, it's the old saying that nobody's ever bigger than the club, and we'll get another striker. Tony Watt was given a chance at Motherwell. He's taking it with two hands. He scored goals for us, and he's going to move on. And that's just the way that I'm going to deal with it now. I'll not be disappointed if I don't see him again, and he'll not be one that will clap back onto the pitch. You know that we've discussed previous players coming, the likes of Jamie Murphy and Chris Cadden and stuff. But for me, this has got a wee bit of a bitter taste in my mouth, just because of all that shite that he gave, that given indication that he was, he was settled here and he wanted to make this a home. And I mean, fans are talking about him as being the captain of the club, for God's sake. So for me, it's slightly different for even the likes of Declan Gallagher. You can say what you want about him. There's obviously various opinions on him. He was pretty up front. Jake Hastie, again, he signed a life-changing contract with Rangers. And he's proven that he's not going to get that money anywhere else. But none of these players have said, oh, this is... I know he's not said it like this, but this is a club for me. I feel wanted here. And this is what I've been searching about, all these different clubs. And really giving the impression that he was going to be the next kind of spend the rest of his career here. That's the story that he was trying to portray. And it just feels as if you've had the piss ripped at you, as I've said. And that's really what made me more annoyed. If it was, for example, a player like, I don't know, like Mark O'Hara, that went away. He's maybe not a good example because he's not an impact. But even the likes of Declan Gallagher, I was near that bothered last year because he didn't come out and make out that this was he loved it and jumping up on top of the wall and almost like signing the contract and stuff like that. I just think that's a wee bit snidey, and it's actually going back to the way that the old Tony Watt was. But I don't know. I
I don't know the ins and outs of the situation, so maybe there's other factors that we are not privy to.
Yeah, that's it. I personally don't hold on any ill will. Not that he would have given a shit if I had held any ill will against him, but I think that it's now just a situation that I would like to see the back of. I would like to see Tony Watt leave the club during the January window and then give us an opportunity to move on from the situation. Otherwise, it's going to be something that hangs over us for the next 4 or 5 months. And that's just, it's not an ideal situation for the player. It's certainly not an ideal situation for the team. And the thing is, like, for talking sake, you don't get another striker in during the window. Connor Shields plays second fiddle to Tony Watt for the remainder of the campaign. How's he going to feel knowing that he's second in line to a guy that isn't going to be here in the summer? It just, there's kind of a few ways of looking at it. Maybe that's a wee bit overdramatic and professional footballers will just go on with it. But you can understand that train of thought, that you'd be quite frustrated by the chain of events and the circumstances there. That
I think as well, Andy, another important factor is the attitude for the support towards him as an individual has a negative effect on the whole team. We all know that Motherwell fans are like, and I've got to say that I would never argue or if anybody, I don't wish him ill will, as you say, but I wouldn't be, I don't know how to put this without sounding too dramatic, but if the fans react the way that they react, usually I would be the one that would be saying, give him a break, he's only doing this. But the way that he's, I feel as if it's been a total piss take for him, and he deserves getting that kind of boon for the stands or whatever. I'm not condoning any personal kind of a stuff that he's got, which he's clearly had through social media, but I just feel, I don't know, you kind of feel let down with a professional footballer, but I don't know, as you say, the best thing for all parties would be that he moved on.
Yeah, I think so. We'll finish up just with a quick one. 2021, your Motherwell Player of the Year.
Well, my answer has had to change now. It would need to be Liam Kelly. It would have been Tony Watt. But I think I would knock my small teeth out if I'd said that. But for me, Liam Kelly.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would have went for. I wouldn't have went for Watt. I think that the saves that Liam Kelly makes on a weekly basis, albeit maybe a kind of ropey month of October, which was his first kind of rough patch in a Motherwell jersey, aside from a mistake in that 4-1 defeat against Kilmarnock. But all goalkeepers make mistakes, all footballers make mistakes, all humans make mistakes. It was a very rare mishap from Kelly there, and that aside, he's been without a doubt the best goalkeeper for me that's been at the club since Darren Randolph. And should he continue his form, he'll rightfully be involved in the Scotland setup for these playoffs and going into the World Cup. And also, he's got a really every chance of staking a claim to be every bit as good as Darren Randolph was with Motherwell. So certainly, I think there's more to come there, and he's been absolutely imperative in keeping us up last season, and played a big role in our forum in the first half of this season. I think that's pretty much all we've got. I was going to run a Young Player of the Year award, but I don't actually think that we've really got much options for that. We're going to 2022 in good form. We're hopefully going to have the supporters back in stadiums for the first game, which will take place at Ross County a week on Tuesday. What are your aspirations going into this year? We obviously started in fourth spot in the Premiership table, though there is a lot of teams strengthening below us, namely Aberdeen and Hibs, who will be looking to begin the year in better fashion than they ended the previous one. Both teams kind of flattering to deceive at times.
I think more of the same is probably the easiest way to answer that. it's the kind of first time in a wee while that obviously, if you compare it to last season, this time we'd be looking at relegation, whereas this time we're even discussing the possibility of European football. A top six finish in a cup run, and I'll be happy. And it's been overall a good difference in 2021, despite all the shite they went with COVID and whatnot. But I think the manager's had a good year, and I'm looking forward to see what happens in the year to come.
That's a good note to end it on, mate. I think that's pretty much all we've got for this review. I've really enjoyed it.
Likewise, it feels as if it's ages ago that we've done it, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah, that's it. There's parts of it that are almost kind of you've erased from the memory. There's parts of it that you're going back to the days of sitting on the couch watching the games. Thankfully, touch wood, these days are behind us, and we can look forward to a full year of fans inside the confines of the stadium, and hopefully plenty of memories to be made. We've got the Scottish Cup starting very soon. We're challenging for Europe in the league. There's plenty to be positive about from a Motherwell perspective. Graeme Alexander signing a new deal, as you said there as well. So, yeah, plenty to look forward to. But thanks again for your time tonight.
Cheers for having us, Andy. Thank you.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back ahead of the games against Ross County and Morton. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. You keep testing at the water from which we're drowning in. But our love is broken, and now it's sink or swim. Then you go out your way to tell me you're not like me. And then you turn into a psycho when you get put to the test. It's not the way that you fall down. Sometimes I